Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now from Mexico City is Joan Grillo, who is a correspondent with Reuters. He's covered Latin America since 2001 for international media, including Time Magazine, CNN, the Associated Press, PBS NewsHour, the Houston Chronicle, CBC, and the Sunday Telegraph. He's witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador in Mexico City. He's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Welcome to Background Briefing, Joan Grillo.
It's good to be here.
And the debate, of course, a much-anticipated television debate, takes place this evening in Mexico City. It feels like the pre-candidate who has been avoiding any public exchanges and any real media scrutiny. He's been supported by the two big television monopolies, Televisa and Azteca, essentially anointed as the next president. But it feels like there's a kind of an insurgency underway, a popular insurgency against the idea that the Mexican elite is imposing this president on the people.
Well, that's an interesting way of putting it. There certainly has been a recent upsurge of popular opinion against Peña Nieto and against the PRI and their, you know, how they ruled Mexico for 71 years continuously from 1929 until 2000. Now, this has been led by the students, and we saw this eruption of student demonstrations starting in the private university, in the Ibero-American University in Mexico City, when students confronted and heckled Peña Nieto. And then after he criticized them and said they were just like, provocateurs, agent provocateurs there, then after that, he criticized them and attacked them. And there was then very large demonstrations with more than 40,000 people in Mexico City. And basically, these protests are really a reaction to the idea of a kind of authoritarian rule, the system generally. In some ways, this is kind of a Mexico's expression of the world demonstrations we've seen in the last 2 years with the Occupy movement in the United States, Los Indignados, or the Angry Ones, as they're called in Spain, the Arab Spring over in the Middle East. Some of the kind of Mexican artists, they identify with being part of that world movement, and they kind of feel a reaction to the system generally, the idea of very rich, very corrupt politicians, having extravagant houses and a bank accounts with millions in them. And this also reaction to the TV company, the dominant TV company, Televisa, being particularly targeted as being a symbol of the system, a symbol of the system which has kind of kept the people down.
So does this mean that if the students are kind of calling out Peña Nieto and the PRI, is that sort of trickling down to the broader population? My understanding is that the broader Mexican population are just exhausted by this war on drugs that's cost 50,000 plus Mexican lives, and they're quite susceptible to the notion that somebody could end it, even if it may end it on the terms of the criminals as opposed to the state.
Well, that's a very good point. There's certainly a lot of people who are very fed up of drug violence, very fed up of the military steaming into neighborhoods, kicking down doors, having shootouts with gangs of criminals, and feel that the PRI, for all its downsides, will be better at handling the situation and better at bringing peace to their country. And that's the kind of PRI-central message. You know, we will fulfill our commitments. You know, they haven't addressed very openly the drug war. None of the candidates have. It's in a way they're living in a bit of a different country from the place of the drug war. It seems like none of the candidates see a real political gain in talking about the drug war too much. But the kind of message of the PRI is, we'll restore peace to Mexico, we'll restore prosperity. But when you're talking about the population of Mexico, like any population, in a large country, in Mexico you have about 116 million people. You have all kinds of different regions, different social classes and different groups with often different points of view. So if you look in Mexico City, there's definitely been, in the capital here, more of a broad feeling against the pre. If you go to cinemas to see any movies right now in Mexico City, the political adverts will come up in the cinema. And when the adverts for the PRI come up in the cinema, there's often booing and whistling among all kinds of people. It's become a very common thing to see there. So that's definitely, there have been people taking on board this anti-PRI message. But then again, you go to some parts of the countryside or some place in northern Mexico and they feel, well, you know, the PRI could be going back to Mexico's good old days, you know, the 1980s, where, well, maybe things were corrupt. Maybe we had a bit of an authoritarian system where we didn't have groups of crazed gunmen leaving piles of decapitated heads every other day.
Again, I'm speaking with Joan Grillo, who's a correspondent with Reuters. He's been covering Latin America and Mexico since 2001 and has witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador in Mexico City. He's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. Tell me about whether or not then this situation will favor the PRD candidate, López Obrador, who AMLO, as he's called, who many argue, of course, that he won the last election and it was sort of stolen from him. And he didn't exactly handle his campaign very deftly last time. He boycotted an important presidential debate. But now I take it he's showing up for this debate, and there's an expectation that this debate may have, the fact that that the pre-candidate has been shielded from scrutiny, this is their only opportunity, right, to expose his deficiencies.
Well, López Obrador has definitely been riding the wave of the anti-pre sentiment. You know, that's his central message. You know, he's against the system. That's what his political discourse has always been. I'm the guy against the system. I'm against the corrupt politicians. Even though he himself was a member of the PRI back in the 80s, before he left in 1988 to help found the leftist PRD. I went to see an event of López Obrador this Monday in the state of Veracruz in the city of Orizaba. And you see, he has got a lot of energy. You know, he really has got his old energy on the stump. He really does connect with people. He's got a very, very good discourse. He's very good at open speeches, spontaneous. He had the stage flooded with people. It was pouring down with rain, and he refused an umbrella. He was like, you know, I'm going to get wet along with the crowd. And, you know, he can joke and really move with the moment. But you see sometimes a bit of a different López Obrador on the TV shows himself. He's not always that good in front of the TV cameras with the journalists. He was on a program on Thursday on the Televisa network, and the Televisa network, as he says, has been very much against him, has been always very much out to kind of take him down, because Televisa represents the kind of interests of the rich and powerful, according to his argument. But he was very much attacked on that TV show by a panel of journalists on Thursday. And he, you know, he struggles to reply, to be very quick, sometimes to reply to those attacks, and sometimes comes across as looking a little bit hot-headed and intolerant is the kind of way that they describe him. Now, after, you were talking about that alleged fraud in 2006. Now, after that, he accused them of fixing the election. He never showed a proof of the election, you know, a fraud in the elections, which in my view was a complete proof to say we could say the elections were fraudulent. But there was a lot of things happening, and it was a very, very close campaign, a very dirty campaign against him, definitely. But after those elections, he blockaded Mexico City for some 2 months in protest. And again, that's being really thrown at him now as well. They're saying, well, this guy's not a Democrat. He doesn't respect elections. When the result doesn't go his way, he blockades the streets and so forth. So we're likely to see quite a fierce debate in which there'll be a lot of attacks against him, and he'll equally be attacking very much Peña Nieto, trying to throw Peña Nieto off balance. Now, another interesting thing which will be featured in this debate most definitely is a report which came out in the British Guardian newspaper on Friday, you know, very big timing, just a couple of days before, which showed, according to documents, that these documents looked like they were showing the television had been selling political space coverage, basically, in favor of certain candidates, two people, including Peña Nieto, and had also been involved in having quite a Machiavellian way of attacking votes of the board in the last election. Now, this has definitely come out in this debate, and it'll be interesting how that is played out.
So, Juan Grillo, do you think then that that Peña Nieto, who has been shielded by the big media, by Azteca and Televisa, and there have been demonstrations, you mentioned we started out talking about the students. The students have been actually demonstrating in front of Televisa, accusing them of basically imposing this fait accompli on Mexico. Before he died, Carlos Fuentes, the great Mexican author, said that Peña Nieto is too ignorant to be president. He's apparently, there's a lot of accusations of him being tied to endemic corruption, and that has authoritarian tendencies, and that according to Carlos Fuentes, that he's simply just too dumb to be president. So that's out there. Is that going to is this the moment for him to be exposed?
Well, it could be. I mean, one thing that helped influence Carlos Fuentes was when Peña Nieto went to the Guadalajara Book Festival last November, and a Spanish journalist asked him a couple of difficult questions about, what does he think about drug legalization, and what does he think about the taking troops off the street, and he answered those fine. Then there's a third softball question. He said to Peña Nieto, what are the three books which have most influenced you in your life? Peña Nieto started to stumble and couldn't name a book. couldn't at the moment, his mind went a blank. And then he started confusing, in fact, a book by Carlos Fuentes with the author, Enrique Corrales, the historian, and started kind of stumbling a bit with that. And so that was kind of one of the reasons why people say, well, this guy is ignorant. So then I think the worry for his people is if he gets caught out in something like that, somehow he kind of gets into a stumble like that. That's what López Obrador would obviously love to see happen, will really try and make happen. The format of the debate itself is a little bit dry. They have quite a long time to answer their questions, not so much really fast back and forth, which could provoke that kind of thing. So and we've seen Peña Nieto, he gets very well trained, it seems, by his handlers. And so it seems that in some cases we've seen of TV interviews and so forth, he's come across not as bumbling as his adversaries may hope for.
So what's your reading on this, Juan Grillo? Again, correspondent with Reuters in Mexico City, has been covering Latin America since 2001 and has witnessed military operations, mafia killings and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals and the United States ambassador in Mexico City. And he's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. What's your feeling then about I don't know whether I'm accurate in suggesting that this is an extremely critical debate tonight, but that seems to be the way it's being presented. The young, you say, the students are against this telegenic pre-candidate who's being packaged but not really challenged. And then you've got people hissing and booing every time his ads come on in the movie theaters. But then you've got this kind of conservatism in the countryside. And of course, when they rule for 70 plus years, one of their many devices of holding on to power was the many, many peasants in Mexico with marginal land would get their annual supply of fertilizer if they voted for PRI. They had all kinds of patronage systems, which may still be in place. But this is a country that has extraordinary disparity in wealth. It also has one of the world's richest, if not the world's richest man from Mexico. So it seems that a lot of Mexicans have just accepted this kind of disparity in wealth and this basic social injustice.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting angle. Mexico, you know, has been a very complicated country, and it's one thing under the pre-rule for 71 years, we haven't seen these different parts of ideological currents in the same way we know we've seen that in some other countries in Latin America or the world. We see very clear left-wing parties and very clear conservative parties kind of fighting out. There's a good way to describe the pre is ideologically nebulous, that they haven't got a clear ideology. They can sometimes be very free market and really embrace free market things. And the other side, they can somehow embrace more corporatist ideas. Now, a lot of people actually are saying they'll vote for the pre because they think the pre will help them economically. The problem is that you've had 12 years now of government under the National Action Party and this great idea of an alternative to the pre, and a democratic alternative from the right, from the pro-business lobby. And there hasn't been enough growth or any real growth in many sectors. We still see the economy dominated by monopolies in many cases.
Well, just in closing, Johan Grillo, how does this play into the war on drugs? Because obviously the U.S. war on drugs is that the casualties in the U.S. war on drugs are largely in Mexico, 50,000 plus people. And somehow immaculately, when the drugs cross the border into the United States, where there is the demand for these drugs and where the weapons come from that do all of the cause all the mayhem in Mexico, there's some sort of immaculate idea that we don't have organized crime on this side of the border. It's all in Mexico. And somehow we're blameless. And nobody really seriously wants to question whether the emperor has any clothes in terms of the war on drugs. What's your expectation then of one, AMLO's approach to the war on drugs, and two, Peña Nieto, if he wins?
Well, I think all of the candidates, whoever takes power, will have a change in strategy. And we've seen that in the talking, in the debates around the election. As I said, the candidates aren't really getting into the issue of the drug war that heavily, which is, you know, surprising. This incredible violence, almost 60,000 drug-related killings in the last 5 years. Thousands have disappeared. Incredible things happening, refugees, groups of armed guys attacking towns, and incredible things happening. And this hasn't been in the conversation, you know, they're in a different country or something. But none of them want to embrace this issue too heavily. At the same time, none want to say, want to take a confrontational stance of saying, we want to legalize drugs, or we want to totally end the war on drugs. They don't see that as being good politics either. So basically, it's more to step away from it and take more of an ambiguous stance on this. Now, whereas Felipe Calderon, when he took power, right away he married himself to the war on drugs. He dressed up in military uniform. He said, we're going to have, like, no quarter for the enemies of Mexico, and launch this big military offensive. Whoever comes into power won't address things in the same way. That's almost guaranteed. It's not going to be seen as good politics. So we've already seen that they're going to be more about damage limitation. Now, Peña Nieto has already said, well, he wants to focus on harm reduction in terms of reducing the number of homicides, reducing the number of extortions coming out often from drug cartels, and reducing the amount of kidnapping for ransom, again, which drug cartels are involved in. Now, it's more of a damage limitation strategy. It's not about, I want to take down the big capos. I want to be out there fighting a war with these guys. It's about trying to, you know, bring this down and trying to stop the critical situation in the countryside. We'll see exactly how he really achieves that. On the other side, López Obrador, his discourse all about going to the communities, going to poor communities and saying, why insecurity is happening, people are involved in crime because they have no options for them. So his idea is all about stimulating the economy, about giving jobs to these places. And again, that's very, very important. Also, I hope whoever takes power will really take social work seriously and will really look about going to some of these neighborhoods, you know, where I've been to and interviewed a lot of young people who have been becoming hitmen and so forth, and really try and give them some offer, some hope in life, other than becoming killers for as little as $100 per murder.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Johan Grillo.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Johan Grillo, who is a correspondent with Reuters in Mexico City. He's covered Latin America since 2001. He's witnessed military operations, mafia killings, and cocaine seizures, and has discussed the drug war with two Mexican presidents, three attorney generals, and the U.S. ambassador in Mexico City. He's the author of El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.